This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report. It is the 23rd day of October 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll check in with Andy Schaefer at the Andersons facility. That's in Everly, Iowa, in the northwestern part of that state. Take a look at the cash grain market there and how they're proceeding through their harvest season. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check up on the numbers as they finished in Chicago. December corn up a penny and a half today at $3.79¾ on its settlement price. The March at $3.88¾, 0.75 cents higher. And May contract at $3.94¾, up 1¼. July up a penny and 0.75 cents at $3.99. And December corn futures 4.03 for next year, up 0.75 cents. Soy complex finished lower. Nearby November beans down 3¼ cents at $8.95½. January at $8.96, down 5. March down 4½ at $8.98¼, and the May at $9.02¼, down 4. July 3½ lower at $9.07, and next year's November soybeans at $8.97, down a penny and 3/4. Soy complex bean meal 2.70 lower at $3.05.10, and the bean oil 28 cents lower at $28.57. December soft red winter wheat down a quarter at $4.90½, and the July at $5.03. down 0.75 cents. The hard red July was unchanged as it finished the day at $5.10¾. Feeder cattle in Chicago, October, 67½ cents lower at $194.87½. November at $192.47½. $1.77½ lower, and live cattle in the October contract up 30 cents, $140.72½ per 100 pounds. December contract at $143.35, that finished down 40. Now the lean hogs, December contract at $63.87½, down $2.57½. February, $66.45, that finished the day, $1.67½ lower. Of course, those are all still trading in the livestock for a few more minutes. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. This is willag.org, public radio for the farming world.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Checking some of the outside markets, crude oil at $44.72 a barrel, $0.66 lower at this hour. Ethanol futures, $1.58¾, up 2¼ cents per gallon. Gasoline, speaking of the gallon, $1.30¼, that's down 0.4 cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel, down 0.9 cents at $1.45½ for the day. Natural gas at $2.28¢, that's down a dime on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 173 points higher at 17,581. We've been watching the dollar closely. It's higher again today at 97.24. That's up 0.786. And the gold futures at $1,165.50, down 60 cents. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Showers are likely, 74 degrees for the high. South-southeast winds at 6 to 15. They'll gust to 21 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation for the afternoon today, 60%. Tonight, showers, possibly a thunderstorm, a low of 61. South winds at about 14. And then Saturday, a 40% chance of rainfall, mainly before 1, mostly cloudy, high of 70. It'll be breezy out there with a 15 to 20 mile an hour wind out of the south-southwest. And Saturday night, partly cloudy as we clear out a bit, 44 degrees on a northwest wind at 7 to 14. And on Sunday, mostly sunny skies, a high of just 63 degrees, northeast winds at about 8 miles an hour. More on the weather forecast at the bottom of the half hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
This is the Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of October. Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas, is ready for the weekend. But before he gets there, he needs to talk to us a little bit about the marketplace. How are you doing, Michael, this afternoon?
Doing great, Todd. Like to see the close here on the grains. It was nice to see the corn fight its way back to positive on the day.
Let's start there. I was going to start with something less positive, but let's go with the positive on the corn market. How about that? December contract. What happened at the end of the day?
You know, I think the news coming out of the ethanol market really came around in the corn market, and a couple things happening. First half of October crush for sugarcane in Brazil was 36 million tons. That was down about 11% from the second half of September. Wet weather in Brazil is slowing the sugarcane harvest, not allowing it to get to the mills. And we saw, even with the crude oil sharply lower today and yesterday, 1.5% gains in the ethanol futures today. I think that also probably spilled over into the corn basis at the processors, which they were up, and river terminals came out at midday up 7 to 10 cents versus Thursday's bids. And so I think the macro did let the micro trade at the last hour or so of the trade. Final thing that probably happened that supported the corn short covering was what we kind of were talking about this morning, is we did see the midday noon models for the hard red wheat belt pretty much take all the moisture out of Kansas, Oklahoma, and Nebraska and push it over into the Midwest for the next 7 days. So hard red wheat was able to go positive on the day and go after some new highs before closing just off those new highs on the day. So those things, I think, all wrapped up together brought the corn up on the week, 3 cents for the December contract. And for me personally, gave the Bloomberg Grain Index weekly chart a real nice technical support ledge to rest on, because we kept both buy signals, both the 10-week moving average, we stayed above that, and the stochastic still showing a buy as well.
Yeah, how about wheat? You mentioned that. We talked about it a bit earlier in the day, that you really think that wheat's going to have to lead at some point. What's happening there fundamentally that can make that happen?
Well, I think most of it's supply right now. I mean, when you look at the export sales, we're still down in the wheat 17% on commitments, and corn is even worse, down 35% on export commitments year to date. But I think we have some weather in Europe and weather in Australia starting to lend some support. Winter wheat planting in Russia and the Baltic states, which is really where our biggest competition is, both logistically and I think geopolitically, we're starting to see them walking back their acreage numbers because of the extreme dryness. We'll see if the USDA on Monday gives us any kind of an emergence issue on the crop progress numbers or not. That's probably, maybe it will be a week too early to be looking for that, but something to keep an eye out for nonetheless.
And that would be for our emergence issues potentially here in the United States, not for
right.
those overseas. Right.
Right. Thanks for the clarification. Yeah. End of the week. Yep, you bet.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so the other thing then. Now let's come back to the where I wanted to start with, which was in the soybean pit. They did finish lower for the week, down 3.25. And that's just about what they were off for the week, too, I think, from one Friday change to the other.
Yeah, and you know, here's where I don't think the beans really had new buying, the ability to have new buying come in and trade the stronger stock market, trade the extremely strong export sales for the week. And we had fresh sales reported this morning of unknown destinations of 208,000 metric tons and had 130,000 metric tons of corn for unknown reported as well. But beans just didn't seem to want to play ball. this week. I think it's primarily due to the fact that the soybean oil is kind of leading this market higher while the meal kind of languishes. And so I don't think the beans close necessarily bad. January beans, I've always wanted them to stay above 905 because that would kind of be a technical breakout. Didn't get that done, but I don't think we did any technical damage either on the soybeans. I think bottom lining it all out was the market was super focused on whether Brazil in the center west region would get rains, whether they would stay caught up with last year's planting pace. And for the most part, they are. They came in this week at 19.6%. Last year, they were at 20.1% with some rains on the way over the next 10 days. And I think that was enough to keep the new buyers out and kind of keep the sellers in control.
One final note before I let you go. Yesterday, the dollar put in an impressive move to the upside. It's not quite matched that today, but it's still another pretty impressive day.
Yeah, and this is where we've been able to cross through the 50-day moving average, the 150-day moving average. We're talking about seeing in the DEIS dollar index a 10-week high and a 4-week low in the crude oil as a result. And just to kind of link some stuff up here, we did get that cattle on feed report today along with the cold storage report yesterday. Cattle on feed report came out pretty friendly this afternoon. We'll see if it can beat and overpower on a micro supply-demand level the macro negativity of the dollar. What I've seen the last 3 weeks, Todd, you and I have talked about, and I think it's been pretty accurate, that that dollar and that cattle have had a very negative correlation. When that dollar rallies, the livestock and especially the cattle tend to take it on the chin.
What did the number show in the on-feed?
Yeah, on-feed 102. That was right in the range of the trade guesses. We also had pretty nice placements numbers, nice for the price as far as upside potential, 96% placed. Average was 95.4. Marketing has also beat expectations, coming in at 98%. When I boiled down the numbers, it's interesting to note that the placements all were lower versus September of last year, except the 800 pound and over. They were actually up 8% more than September 14. So when I drilled down into the numbers, it looked like maybe April fat cattle will maybe get the best look as far as the potential for upside potential out of this report when everything's said and done.
Thanks so much for being with us. Looking forward to having you here in the great state of Illinois in the month of November for our Farm Assets Conference.
It is a great state, and I'm excited to be there.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. You can listen to him again on our website at willag.org. There you'll find a link to purchase your tickets. They're just $30 for our Farm Assets Conference. You can also dial this number right now if you want, 800-898-1065. The Farm Assets Conference, the 24th day of November. That's the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. Mike Zuzulo will be there along with many others, and I hope you will, too. Buy your tickets right now. Again, the number to call, 800-898-1065. In today's agricultural news, this Sunday's presidential election in Argentina is important to soybean farmers in the United States. The vine candidates have different views on the commodity export tax. If it's removed, South American agricultural expert Michael Cordonier of Soybean and Corn Advisor says farmers in Argentina will plant corn rather than beans.
That would be a game changer in Argentina. If they take off those export taxes, the farmers would like to plant more corn because right now there's like 6 times more acres of soybeans than corn. And the farmers all know that's a very bad agricultural practice. They want to rotate more, but the government is forcing them to have a monocrop of soybeans. So if they take off that export tax, I think instantly the farmers will go out to and there and plant some more corn.
It, of course, is springtime in Argentina. The leading opposition candidate opposes the export tax. Argentine presidential elections take place Sunday with a possible runoff election slated for November 22nd if needed. Cordonier made his comments during Commodity Week. We'll stay on the international front where China could buy about 50% less corn from state stockpiles in this season than the previous year as local governments offer subsidies to encourage processors to use more of the domestically grown grain from the last season. Increased local purchases by Chinese processors could dent the Chinese appetite for corn imports. That'll pressure global prices. Beijing will buy 40 to 50 million tons of corn from state stocks during a six-month purchasing period. That starts next month. That's compared to 83 million tons in the last fiscal year, 14-15. Now let's come back home to the United States, where the deadline is fast approaching for implementation of the positive train control safety system. And some say the economy will start to feel the effects next month if its implementation is not delayed. That's bad news for agriculture, as rail cars used for shipping inputs like fertilizer and grain could be pulled off the track starting sometime, again, next month. A Transportation and Infrastructure Committee bill calls to extend the deadline to the end of 2018. We'll stay in Washington, D.C., but celebrate the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Beltsville Agricultural Research Center, or BARC. It was honored as a National Historic Chemical Landmark by the American Chemical Society for phytochrome. It's recognized as one of the universal regulators of plant physiology and growth. It took about 41 years to hunt down phytochrome from 1918 to 1959. The BARC team named it phytochrome. Red lights switch phytochrome to a biologically active form, while far red lights reverse it to a biologically inactive form, a process that controls germination, growth, and flowering. And finally today, National Geographic and Bayer Crop Sciences have created a brand new game. It's called Top Crop Farming for the Future. It's an interactive online game that aims to increase national agricultural literacy through educating students on the basics of what it takes to produce crops. Through a series of virtual growing seasons, game players will experience the various in-season challenges farmers face, like pest, disease, and weather. Top Crop Farming for the Future is available on the National Geographic's education website. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. While farmland prices likely will continue to see downward pressure into 2016, the capitalized values do not suggest the price of farmland is too high, or at least in a bubble. Three agricultural economists at Illinois have written an article about the value of farmland for the FarmDoc Daily website. It, in simple terms, says two things. First, the price of farmland is not too high or even in an economic bubble. Secondly, the downturn in commodity prices does not point to a situation like the farm crisis of the 1980s. Here's one of the co-authors of the article, Todd Keithy.
The two parts of that, the moving parts, are first, obviously the cash rents, which we expect to see come down as we see farm incomes decline, margins get squeezed a bit. Although the rental market is relatively sticky, it doesn't move quite as fast as what we see income in aggregate moving. So we expect to see some downward pressure, but not sort of a bottom falling out drastic movement in cash rental rates. And then the second side is obviously the interest rate, which the Fed has continually stated that they're expecting to raise rates in the future. But those movements always sort of get pushed down the line.
Keithy and his colleagues use the capitalization value to make their assessment. They say small increases in interest rates could have a dramatic impact on capitalized value. Because farmland is a long-lived asset, farmland faces larger potential price decreases than other assets if interest rate increases occur that translate to changes in the real capitalization rate. On the other hand, cash rents would have to fall considerably before the capitalized value is below current farmland prices. This is because while farmers actually held the line on what they paid for farmland, cash rents did not hold that same line. Farms, for a while, were worth more than the top prices, but cash rents rallied most of the way. Those can drop back and not have an effective impact on the underlying value of the farm. Here's what Todd Keithy thinks will happen next year.
I think we'll see some continued downward pressure that we've seen over the last year. I anticipate if we continue to see declines, it'll be very slight movements of sort of within a few percentage points. I don't think we'll see a price correction or response that will be as drastic or as fast as the appreciation was sort of leading up to it.
It being the new higher price of farmland. You may read more on the FarmDoc Daily website. Andy Schaefer now joins us from the Andersons facility in Everly, Iowa, to take up the cash grain market. Thanks much, Andy. I missed conversation with you last week, so we've had a couple of weeks since we've discussed the season there in your part of the world. How far along are farmers?
Oh, we are definitely hitting in around 80 to 85% harvested on our corn, and we're done with our beans, and we've been done with our beans for a good week. So it's been full blast on corn, and we actually got a first rain year. We got about an inch and a tenth since last night, so everything stopped, and that's been our first rain in about 30 days. So guys are happy for the break, and the ground is dry, so we needed the rain.
How good were the soybeans?
Oh, great. I mean, we are in our neck of the woods in northwest Iowa here. Everyone's been happy with their corn and bean yields. And beans specifically have been lots of people saying, this has been my record yield on beans. And I would call it, we've been hearing reports anywhere from as high as 73 bushels, 75 bushels. But I would say the average has been 64 to 65.
Right. So what does that do to your basis?
Well, our basis did fade at the very tail end of harvest. The processors got plugged and reduced hours, and they faded their basis. And naturally, the country elevator has to react to that. And we went from 60 to 63 to 65 to 70 in the matter of about 5 days.
Do you have soybean piles in your area?
There were. There definitely were. And most people got those picked up now and converting those to corn. So they're picked up, and then corn's going on those same piles.
So they moved quickly. Do they rail them out, or what happened to the soybeans then?
No, I think they're getting moved over to the local processors. Our rail infrastructure in this part of Iowa is not very good. So I think they found their homes at the processors as they kind of emptied out a little bit.
Now tell me about the corn crop in the area and basis and how movement's been.
It's been good. I mean, when you have obviously as dry days as we have, guys are running long hours, the elevator's running long hours, and we're running out of space because I think people put a few extra soybeans and corn space, and so that limits your corn space. So we're seeing lots of ground or piles on the ground. And basis has kind of held in there pretty steady. We're 43 under here at the elevator, and I just don't know that that's going to get weaker because the farmers just simply are not selling the corn, and there's plenty of demand around for it. So I think the basis just kind of holds steady here for the time being.
How big is your facility there, and how many bushels do you have on the ground for corn?
Well, we got two. Well, we have seven facilities, kind of all around, and our two facilities, we have ground piles, and one of them is a 1.7 million bushel grain pile, and the other one's about a 1.2, and both of them are about three quarters full. So we expect those to get filled up here later this week.
And that would be about normal for you for a normal year?
No, the past couple of years we've had shorter crops, so we still put grain out on the pile, but we have, well, the one pile was new last year, so it was kind of a testing deal, and with a smaller crop, we did not get the entire 1.7 million bushels out on that pile. We got about one, and with the bigger crop, it's certainly the space is needed, and we fully anticipate to fill those up.
And very quickly, your spot bids.
Our cash price on corn delivered the elevator today is $3.37, and our soybean price is $8.25.
Thank you so much, Andy.
Thank you, sir.
Andy Schaefer is with the Andersons. He's at their Everly, Iowa facility.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Boston Cream Pie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1749, Nicholas Appert was born. A French inventor, he is known as the father of canning. In 1800, Napoleon offered a 12,000 franc reward to anyone who could devise a method to preserve food for troops on the march. Appert won the prize in 1810, and he established the first commercial cannery in the world, decades before Louis Pasteur proved that heat kills bacteria. Eventually, glass jars were replaced in commercial operations with tin or wrought iron canisters. In 1868, Cullen Whipple died, an American inventor. He patented the first practical screw machine in the U.S. for making pointed, self-tapping screws. In 1920, Ted Fujita was born. A Japanese-American meteorologist, he increased the knowledge base of severe storms and developed a scale for measuring tornadoes on the basis of their damage. In 1971, Stuart Criddle died, an English-born Canadian farmer. He carried out numerous breeding experiments for corn. But it's his older brother, Norman, who is better known. He developed the so-called Criddle mixture to control grasshoppers in Western Canada. The recipe? 1 pound of Paris green wallpaper pigment, 50 pounds of horse manure, and a pint of molasses. Mix until the lumps are gone. And in 1921, Edward A. Dozy died. He discovered vitamin K. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to Illinois Public Media. This is Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org, and then you'll find a link to our Farm Assets Conference website, but that's simple to get to as well. It's farmassetsconference.com. We're starting to get closer to the time, November the 24th, when that conference will take place in Normal, Illinois at the Marriott Hotel, a great facility, a really great conference. This is the second annual event. Will kick off early in the morning with the Corn Growers Annual Meeting. That starts at 8 o'clock, and then at 10:30, we'll pick up with the Farm Assets Conference. We'll go through big data with John Jansen. He's with Climate Corp, or Climate Ag Services, or Field View, however you want to view it. We'll talk about big data, what it is, how it's used, where it comes from, and where it goes, and who owns it, that all with John Jansen, a vice president at the Monsanto Company. There's another name for you that goes along with Climate Corp, Climate Ag Services, Field View, and Monsanto. Should be a great session, just one of several for the day. We'll also take up our regular set of analysts to talk about both the corn and the soybeans on panel discussions. We'll take your questions as well. And then from the TIA CREF, Center for Farmland Investment, Bruce Sherrick, the price of farmland and what the outlook might be, and capitalization. And Gary Schnitke will be here too to take a look at the 2016 input prices and what the prospects for revenue and income might be for the coming year. All a really good Farm Assets Conference show, our second annual event in Normal, Illinois. This is a signature series. If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, farmassetsconference.com or 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Now, let's get an update of the agricultural weather forecast.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey. This week was warm and dry in Illinois. The statewide average temperature was 3 degrees above average. Widespread rain finally arrived on Friday, but has remained light. The U.S. Drought Monitor introduced moderate drought into central Illinois from Moline to almost Effingham. This was due to rainfall deficits of 4 to 6 inches in the last 90 days. I'm not sure I agree with that assessment. Because this occurred late in the growing season after a wet spring and early summer, the impacts on agriculture and water supplies has been minimal at this point. According to the Water Survey Soil Temperature Network, 4-inch soil temperatures under grass are still warm. North of Interstate 80, daily highs are still in the upper 50s. For central and southern Illinois, daily highs are still in the mid to upper 60s. Until we get much cooler weather and some rain, soil temperatures will remain warm and fluctuate a lot throughout the day. According to the National Weather Service, highs on Saturdays will range from the low 60s in the north to the low 70s in the south. Highs from Sunday through Wednesday will remain in the 60s throughout the state. Lows will generally be in the 30s and 40s in northern Illinois and the 40s to 50s in central and southern Illinois. After the rain moves out on Saturday, the next chance of rain is on Tuesday and Wednesday with expected amounts in the ballpark of half an inch, maybe more in southern Illinois. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Stay with us on many of these radio stations. Commodity Week is coming up next. Our panelists include Wayne Nelson, Kurt Kimmel, and Ellen Dearden.